Good morning. I'm still really reeling from John and Claire's wedding yesterday. So excited. I can't stop thinking about them as they start a new family. That's very exciting. For those of you who don't know me, my name's Ali and I'm married to Ed over there. We've been married for 16 years and we've got three children who are 9, 7 and 5. And for those who do know me, you're probably thinking, why are you talking about family? Because they're always running around church and being completely unruly. So I'm not here to give you a talk on how to have a perfect family. Unfortunately, I can't do that. I'm just going to talk about living for Jesus in family and just share a bit of my story over the years. So this is a little family tree. Family can be defined as the one or two parents living with the children that they care for, or it could be defined as a group of persons closely related by blood, as parents, children, uncles, aunts, and cousins. Now, this family tree looks very neat and tidy, doesn't it? But I think we'll all agree that often family looks a bit more like this. Families aren't always neat and tidy, and family units aren't always neat and tidy. And family looks very different for each of us. Oops, sorry, Carol, there's your watch. I was talking to a girl in the hostel that I work in. I work in a homeless hostel in Tunbridge Wells on Wednesday. And I said that I was doing this talk. And she said, what do you mean by family? And I said, well, what do you mean by family? And she said, family are those who stick with you through thick and thin. It's nothing to do with blood. Family is loyalty. And another girl agreed with her. She said, yeah, it's those who are loyal to you. For them, they don't necessarily have family. They don't have family support, or they have had family. But for them, family is quite a sad thing. It's not joyful. It's not a sense. It doesn't give them a sense of belonging or security or identity. And I think I'm really aware that for all of us here, we all are potentially in a family, or we've been born into a family, but family doesn't necessarily look how we want it to. It's an emotive subject, and I'm definitely feeling the weight of responsibility of talking about it. Like trees, families do go through changes. People are added, people are taken away. We have marriages and in-laws. We have maybe breakups and ex-laws. We have step families. People are born, people are married, and sadly people die. Families go through seasons as well, seasons of joy and excitement like yesterday, and seasons of pain and suffering, seasons of illness, maybe unemployment and breakdown. So I am just aware that today we are in the presence of God, and I just wanted to start with reminding us that he knows whatever situation you're in today. He knows what's going on in your family, whatever role you're playing in your family at this particular moment, whether you're living with family or not. And I'm just trusting that he will talk to you and just bring the encouragement, maybe the conviction, the healing that only he can bring. And I just wanted to share on the last slide, I've gone off piste already. There's this really beautiful verse that says, it's in the Psalms, and it basically says that God is the father to the fatherless, he's the defender of widows, and he, in his holy dwelling, and God sets the lonely in families. And that's definitely been my experience, and I just want to say at the start, so Ed and I are really grateful for being part of this church family. This is family to us. We love being part of church. So, bear with me. God is sovereign, and he chose whatever family you were born into. Isaiah 44:2 says that I am your creator, and you were in my care before you were born. Long before you were conceived by your parents, you were conceived by the mind of God. Regardless of the circumstances of your birth or who your parents are, God had a plan in creating you. No matter whether your parents were good, bad, or indifferent, God knew that those two individuals possessed exactly the right DNA that God wanted to make you. God's purpose took into account human error and even sin, and God never does anything accidentally. He never makes mistakes. He has a reason for everything he makes, and God's motive for creating you was his love. Ephesians 1:4 says, long before he laid down the foundations of the earth, God had us in mind. He settled on us as the focus of his love. So don't wish for a different parents or different spouse or different children. They're the ones God's put you with, and he's got a purpose in it. Sorry, can I have the little blob thing? Cool. Okay, so I was born into a non-Christian family. So I can't talk about Christian family from that point of view. But like I said, God knew who my parents would be. And at the age of 8, I was quite an ardent atheist. I decided God didn't exist. And I remember arguing with one of my mum's friends that Jesus just didn't exist. And even though I knew God wasn't real, I used to get really angry with him when things went wrong, and life wasn't always happy. And I would just swear at him and blaspheme, and just, I was horrible. So that was by the age of 8. And then by the age of 9, we moved to Sevenoaks, and I met a real live Christian. And she had a real live Christian family. And I was totally hooked. She was so kind, and she was really fun. And her family were really kind and really fun. And they seemed to really like each other. And they were normal. They weren't perfect. They argued, but they chatted together. They talked together. They ate together. They prayed together. They had fun. They went on holiday. And I was really, really attracted by the atmosphere in their family. And she invited me along to a Christian youth group. And it was brilliant. There was fun games. And again, this atmosphere of love and inclusion. And they talked a lot about Jesus, but I ignored that bit because I knew he wasn't real. And I went along to that. And then when I was 12, I went to a camp at Carrotty Wood, where I heard the gospel for probably about the 100th time. But actually this time, it made sense, and I believed it. I believed that Jesus died for me personally, and I believed that he loved me. And even if I was the only person on the whole planet, that he would have died for me. And I think I was able to believe that because I'd experienced the love and acceptance of these Christian families around me. So I just want to encourage you today that Christians in family, whatever that looks like, if it's a single parent family, if it's you're on your own, if it's a mad, like crazy family, if it's dysfunctional, however it is, God uses Christian families as such a powerful witness in our broken and lonely world today. You know, we may not feel like we're perfect, that we've got everything under control. We might be worried that our house is a mess or our kids are unruly. But actually, that doesn't matter. Just invite people in. And I think that's one of the ways God sets the lonely in families. It's he uses us. And we don't know what influence we have as the Holy Spirit works through us. And as people see us trying to live together and trying to love each other and messing up and trying to forgive each other, that is incredibly powerful witness. So I just encourage you to just invite people into your family, no matter how messy it is. I also just want to talk about what it's like to live with non-Christian family, because I know for some of you here, maybe you do live with non-Christian family, or you have family who aren't Christian. And that's hard for two reasons. Obviously, in our country, in other countries, we maybe would be excommunicated or even killed for turning Christian. But in this family, we can suffer kind of mild persecution. So my family weren't massively impressed when I became Christian. They didn't understand me, so there was a barrier there. But also, they would kind of ridicule me or take the mick or kind of point out when things weren't very Christian, which was probably a lot of the time, seeing as I was a teenager. And that was hard, actually. There's a verse in the Bible that God says he comes and he brings division between mothers and daughters and children and parents. And that happens when we're not in the same kingdoms, as it were. And I did really experience that. It was hard. But what was harder was knowing that the people I loved the most didn't know the love of Jesus and didn't know the salvation of Jesus. And I was desperate for my family to know Jesus. And I'd love to stand here today and say, and I prayed really hard and I did this, this and this, and they're all Christians, praise the Lord. But actually, even after knowing me, or probably because they know me for nearly 30 years now, none of them have become Christians. And that's really gutting. But all I can say is just keep praying, keep hoping. And I made loads of mistakes. I bought them all Bibles for Christmas, which they probably weren't. I think my brother wanted a Def Leppard CD, and I bought him a Bible. And I used to like have lots of theological debates with them and try and convince them that God was real and God was there. And I would think I was really annoying. And there's another verse in the Bible that encourages you. Well, it's actually speaking to wives, and it says, if you're a wife and your husband isn't a Christian, stay with him and win him over with your godly living, and not your words. It's about how we live, isn't it? And I know that's quite tricky, tricksome, but that's why we've got grace and why we've got God. So it's about living it out and loving and forgiving. That is the gospel after all, isn't it? Christ died to forgive us, and he asks us to forgive each other. And I just wanted to share a tiny little story as well. Things haven't always been easy with me and my mum. And when I lived abroad for a little bit, she rang me up once to tell me how disappointed she was and how I'd really let her down. And I'd done something that basically was it was God's economy, basically. My friend had given me, it's a long story, I'll tell you later if you want. But anyway, I'd done this thing and it wasn't bad. It was just my mum didn't understand it because it was God's way of working. And she rang me up. She's really angry with me and hung up. And I was like, oh, really feeling very sorry for myself. And so I went off and prayed. And God gave me a picture. Actually, it wasn't a picture because I don't think I really get pictures. But it was an impression or a thought in my mind. And he showed me how he sees my mum. And he showed me her as an orphan. Because her mum had died just before I was born. Her dad had died a year before this conversation. Her husband and her brother had cut her out of the will, and that was all horrible. She wasn't in a happy marriage. My parents didn't get on, and she didn't have many friends, so she wasn't very loved. And so God turned it on its head, like he always did. And instead of feeling sorry for myself, I started having a real compassion for my mum and started feeling sorry for her and just wanting to pour God's love into her life. And God enabled me to forgive her. And forgiveness is never easy, is it? And it doesn't mean saying that the thing is right or didn't matter or didn't hurt, but it means just letting go of it and not allowing it to kind of fester. So, yeah, living with non-Christian family is about living it out, loving, forgiving, and not preaching. So then, next in my little journey, skip a few years, I got married. Yay! So I've got my little... Oh, I forgot that bit. Oh, no, this is it, yeah. So I got married and started a different role as a family member, as a wife. And that was obviously complete bliss and joyful and lovely. And a bit of a shocker, really, isn't it? Because you have to put somebody else's needs above your own, don't you? You have to... God's very clear in his priorities for relationships. We always put God first, and then if we've got a spouse, we have to put them next, and then our children. If we're children, as I keep telling mine, you need to obey your parents in everything, because this pleases the Lord. And if you are grown-up children, you still need to honour and respect your parents, even if they're non-Christians, I found out. So I was having to put Ed's needs first, and I remember chatting to this friend Dee, whose family I became a Christian through. Her mum became my godmum when I was baptised, and then she did mine and Ed's marriage prep. So I was chatting to her, and I said, oh my goodness, I've realised how horrible and selfish I am. And she said, you wait till you have children. So, in my kitchen, I've got this little picture here, and it's domestic bliss, and it's there to remind me to live for God in the nitty-gritty grind and frustration of daily life. And it's got loads and loads of Bible verses on it. And the one that I really love is this one. And I think this sums up how we are to live as Christians in family. It's really tricky, but this is it. So therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Easy. So I think if it was easy, God wouldn't have told us to do it, would he? I remember doing a talk of this on a pony trekking camp to little sort of 11-year-old girls, and we did a little fashion parade, and we put on the fluffy pink jacket of compassion and the kind of gentle jeans of kindness, and all these sorts of things. So I won't do that with you, but I was thinking as we get dressed in the morning, maybe we can choose to put on kindness. As we're brushing our teeth, we can think about the words that are coming out of our mouth that day and just stop ourselves from maybe the grumpiness and the criticism, and just try and use words of encouragement. And we will mess up, which is why we need to bear with each other and forgive each other whatever grievances we may have against one another. I was talking with my children about what makes a good Christian family, like how can we be Christians in family? And Toby's answer was to get a pet. So, you know, get a pet. And we were talking also about how we need to try and love each other. And I was saying, is that easy or is that hard? And they decided it was sometimes really easy, because sometimes life is really fun, and sometimes it's really hard, especially if we're tired or grumpy or poorly or ill or just living in close proximity with other sinners, which we all are in family. So it is hard, but God's given us that model and that kind of example to follow, and he doesn't leave us on our own, does he? He helps us in it. So let me find my next bit. Yeah, as I said, living in family doesn't look perfect. It's often very messy. And it's always going to be. So don't try and have the perfect family, because it won't happen this side of heaven. I just want to encourage us, though, by just looking at the Bible again, because I love the Bible. The Bible's full of messy families. Starting with the very first family in history, it all went wrong. When Adam and Eve rebelled against God, the consequences of the fall were pain in childbearing and parenting and frustration in marriage. So it all started there, and we're to expect it. It's kind of normal. Then the first brothers, one of them murdered the other one. In Hebrews 11, we see the great cloud of witnesses who are commended for their faith. And we see the names of many people with seriously dysfunctional families. Noah was a drunk who cursed the son, who caught him naked. Abraham's son tricked his brother into selling his birthright for a bowl of stew and deceived his father into blessing him. David's family included estrangement, adultery, murder, and seriously rebellious children, one of whom killed a brother, then tried to overthrow his father and went to war against him. Jephthah made a hasty vow and ended up offering his only daughter as a sacrifice to fulfill it. Joseph's brothers tried to kill him, then sold him as a slave. His brothers' families were pretty messy as too. 12 brothers, 12 brothers present plenty of opportunities for falling out and relational catastrophes. Multiple close relationships can go wrong in many ways. Yet through these families, God was working out his salvation purpose. As Joseph, despite all his sufferings and mishaps, said, "As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today." All the women in the genealogy of Christ found in Matthew 1 had messy families. Tamar's son was a result of her pretending to be a prostitute with her father-in-law. Rahab was in fact a prostitute. Ruth's husband died, and she ended up caring for an embittered mother-in-law. Bathsheba's husband was killed by her lover, and Mary became pregnant before she was married, and because of appearance was nearly dumped by her fiancé. The Bible is full of messy families, and those are the ones that God chose for his purpose of saving the world. So I think we can be encouraged. So back to my story. Ed and I started having children. I've got a little... So this is Ed's arm. This is one of his many tattoos. And this is a dream that Ed had. It's a kind of a tree. And on it, you can kind of see a T and an F and an M for our children. Because both Ed and I are from non-Christian families. So we were kind of starting a new Christian family tree when we started the journey of having children. And we kind of really felt like... we were a blank page and we didn't have a clue what to do really. So we looked to church family, we looked to God, we looked to the Bible to tell us how to kind of bring up children in Christian family. Well, Marilyn was right. Having children showed up even more of my own sinfulness. I've never felt such intense emotions of joy and delight and anger and sadness at my children's disobedience and mistakes. And I now know how God feels about me. As parents, we're called to disciple our children, to teach them about God and encourage them in their relationship with him. We're called to train them up in the way that they should go. Our children are like our mini church. They're like their highest priority. They're our highest mission field. Sometimes I think it's easier to kind of go off and do other service and other ministry instead of minister to our families. But God says we need to minister to our own families first. And then out of that, we can minister to others. And actually, we can include our children in ministry, can't we? Like, as I said earlier, we can invite people into our families and our children can kind of be there and, you know, help in that too. And be praying for other non-Christian families or friends. We can do all of that with our children. So how do we live for Jesus in Christian families? I've got a few top tips for survival and thrival in Christian families. I'll do the next slide, actually. Have you got the Deuteronomy one? Yeah, that's it. So this is the reading we had at the beginning of the service. And this is God's words to Israel before they went into the promised land. And he was talking about living in community and living in family with him. And like in the Colossians verse, it's about everyday living. It's just being like Jesus in everyday. So Deuteronomy 6:4-9 says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength." And that's where we need to start. We need to start with God. If we want our earthly relationships to go well, we need to start with investing in our heavenly one. And I know personally, when you've got family or you're caring for sick or elderly relatives or parents maybe, if you've got someone you're caring for 24/7, you don't actually have a lot of time to yourself, if any. And you don't have a lot of headspace. But I always think, I always cling on to the fact that something's better than nothing. And God's grace will fill in the gaps. You know, for years, my main kind of quiet time, my daily time reading the Bible and praying to God was actually reading my children's little blessing Bible to them in the morning and then trying to remember it during the day. And just snatching time and having, it says here, "These commands I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road and when you lie down and when you get up." So it's about gossiping the gospel. It's about chatting about God in everyday life as you're walking along, as you're sitting at home at the meal table maybe, or if you're just sitting doing homework or hanging out with them, as you're going on the school run, as you're just walking along, and if it's not children, if it's other family, just kind of think of situations where you're just hanging out and you're chatting about life and relating that to God, and chatting about God and relating that to life. It's supposed to be natural, like a real entwining in everyday life, not a set little period, although that's good as well. So as it also says, "Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on your door frames of your house and on your gates." And I think the tying God's words onto our hands is an image of just in everything we do, it's practically living it out. So it's trying to encourage our children to be using their hands and their feet and their mouth, just everything for God. So on the way to school, I often give my children a little mission that day. So I might tell them to either like smile at a teacher or go and find someone in the playground who looks lonely and kind of try and be Jesus to them. So this is all obviously about God's commands and God's words, and the most important one is to love God. So in all of it, it's just keeping connected with God in that relationship with God. But also, if we're going to be impressing God's words on our children, we need to be reading them with them. And we aren't always amazing at this. But in our dream world, we read the Bible with our children every day at breakfast and pray. And often what actually happens is we run into the car, and I've like been going, "Grace, Grace, Grace, don't shout. I've got into the car, and they go, "Oh, we forgot to read the Bible." Or I'll say, "Oh, no, I forgot to read the Bible." So we think of a verse in the Bible, and we kind of come up with something, and then we have a little pray. And I listen to Christian CDs in the car as well. So we have really cheesy CDs that are basically Bible verses set to music that they love. And I'm just trying to get as much Bible into them as possible, because God says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. And our minds are like sponges when we're young, and we have no memory when we're old. So I'm just trying, my children remember verses, or remember everything really quickly. So I think as much as we can get in, Christian CDs, VeggieTales DVDs, don't know if anyone knows the VeggieTales, really cool Christian, what's it called, cartoon thing. Anyway, yeah, so that's cool. We try and do a family worship time. Doesn't that sound really holy? It really doesn't look it. So what happens is Ed strums on his little guitar. He's been learning for 2 years. And they all kind of jump around the sofas. And then I sometimes go, "Should we just put a CD on?" And then I'm really discouraging. And they're all jumping around. And then we might sing a bit of a song. And we might read a bit. We've got a really cool long story short, which does little short bits of the whole Bible and activities. And then someone will argue over who does the activity. Someone will, like, jump onto somebody's head. There'll be a massive bundle. And then one of us will either storm out or be sent out of the room. So it doesn't look... John would literally be horrified, and I'm really glad he's on honeymoon now. But we try... Oh, yeah, thanks, John. Okay, we try. We really try. And, yeah, like I said, I'm just clinging on to that something is better than nothing, and God's grace will fill in the gaps. So, hang on, I've lost my place. Oh, yeah, praying. We do try and pray with our children and with each other. For years, Ed and I really struggled to pray together, actually. I don't know why. Actually, I do know why. The devil really hates it. He hates Christians praying together. And if you are blessed enough to live with other Christians, praying together is so powerful. And I just really encourage you to do it. I often fall asleep at night when Ed prays, because he's got one of those lulling voices. So again, I'm not very encouraging. But we pray with our children at bedtime, and we do this thing called teaspoon, which is thank you, sorry, please. Just give them a little pattern to pray with. And sometimes we don't. And then we've got a blessings jar, which, and again, was a really lovely idea that often ends in arguments. But we've got this jar of manky old dried up pasta, and what happens is the kids pick a piece of pasta and put it in the jar, and we go around, and they need to say a blessing or an answer to prayer that they've had that day. And the idea is really lovely, is that they're looking for, you know, God in everything and blessings in the little things. But again, often they'll argue over who's taken too much pasta or who said what first. But I'm hoping that God's grace will overrule, and somehow, some day, my children will grow up to recognize God's hand in every part of life, and how even the little things, like their chicken laying an egg, or seeing a snail, or a particular friend at school, is a blessing direct from God. So how can we as church support each other in families? Titus 2 encourages older women to be training younger women to be loving their children and loving their husbands, because it doesn't always come naturally. And it also talks about how older men should be encouraging younger men. And as church family, I think we do really need to support each other. I think pods, little prayer triplets, and house groups are a really good way of supporting each other, but only if they're honest. You know, it's much easier to pray for our friend or our ministry or work than it is to be really honest about our struggles in family, because I think we're under some kind of illusion that we all have to be perfect. If you're not in a real honest pod, prayer triplet or house group, I really encourage you to be in one. Or like in the Titus, if you could, if you're not meeting up with an older or wiser Christian, I would just really encourage you to pray for one or seek one. Go and find someone and say, can you just help me through life? And if you are an older or wiser Christian, just be praying about who you can be getting alongside and encouraging. And actually, do you know, we are all older and we are all younger. So I think we all need to be giving and receiving in this way. We all feel like we're failing at times in our families, and we all need support. So let's encourage each other in church. As parents, we are in the middle of the very messy business of bringing up professional mistake makers, and they're at their height of their career. So we do need encouragement. And lastly, really quickly, just remember the cross. Remember that God is our family. As I said earlier, he is the father to the fatherless, a defender of widows, and he sets the lonely in family. He describes himself as a loving father, a mother, a husband, and a brother. We won't be perfect like him, but that's why Jesus died. When he obeyed his father to die on the cross, he dealt with all our sin and weaknesses. He paid the price in our place so that there is now no condemnation. We are free to be in relationship with God. Jesus rose again with resurrection power, and he has put that same power in us through his Holy Spirit. We have the power to daily rely on him, to daily walk in grace and forgiveness, daily bear with one another, as long as it depends on us to live at peace with everyone. His power is made perfect in our weakness. So God will fulfill his perfect purpose through and in our families, no matter how messy they are.